FBI Studios. This is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Roth. Last week, I broke down Tiffany Teasdale's first interview with the police. She sat for that interview on September 20th, just 2 days after she found out about the murders. At that point, there had been no time for anyone to influence her opinions. She was just looking for answers. We heard that Gray was a jerk, Robert was sweet, things seemed to be good with Jacob, she couldn't stand John, her mom seemed desperate to get away that weekend, and she and her mom were both working with the FBI regarding an investigation into Ron Friedley. She also told Bumpensero during that first interview that her mom and John always had financial problems, mostly stemming from John rarely working. What's interesting about that is that if Tiffany's impression of their financial circumstances is correct, it almost seems like John was hiding money. I say that because when we heard from Tim Rutherford, who was John's main contract, he verified via 1099 that John was making over $60,000 a year just from him. But according to Tiffany, her mom's job was what they were using to pay all of the bills, and they could barely keep up. Today you're going to hear two more interviews with Tiffany. The first occurred with Detective LeClaire calling her on October 25th, about 5 weeks after the murders. In that interview, we hear some interesting information about Ron's pension money. And then after an ad break, you're going to hear a longer interview recorded in January of 2018, 11 and a half years after the murders. At this point, Robert and Christian had been arrested for the second time and had been in custody for over a year. This interview was recorded just 3 months before the trial began. The main focus of what Bodmer and the District Attorney Ackie are trying to accomplish in this interview is they're trying to get out of Tiffany that she is the one that told Javier about Becky's body being in the wheelbarrow. They don't come out and say it, but in the trial transcripts, that's a point that they make, that Robert had guilty knowledge, even though Robert, Bo, Corey, and Jacob all said that Javier told them about the body in the wheelbarrow. Javier says he didn't find out about it until days later when Tiffany told him. So that's the main focus from Bodmer and Aki. But they never really get what they're looking for. They just get kind of close. In this interview, you're going to hear Tiffany talk about a phone call with Robert and his reaction. And take that for what it's worth, but I just want to point out that we didn't hear anything about this phone call in her first two interviews. It never comes up on September 20th, but to be fair, when I checked the phone records, even though she thinks it happened on the 19th, that call actually occurred on the 21st, but it also doesn't come up in her October 25th interview, which is the first one you're going to hear today. And in that last interview, you're also going to hear about a phone call that Tiffany says Javier made on the night of the murders, a call that we've never heard about before. There's a lot of information to absorb in these interviews, and since this is going to be a long episode, this is the last that you're going to hear from me today. We'll be discussing everything and what it all means in this week's Friday follow-up. This is Season 12, Episode 31, Tiffany, Part 2.
Texas Ranger James Holland is a legendary interrogator. They call him the serial killer whisperer.
You can't hide those indications, and that's why yesterday I knew that he did it.
But now, shocking interrogation tapes reveal how the super cop really operates.
And that's why they asked me to come in, because I'm special.
From Something Else, The Marshall Project, and Sony Music Entertainment, this is Smokescreen. Just say you're sorry. Listen and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Say goodbye to the dish and hello to Sky Stream, the new way to get Sky over Wi-Fi. So you can get unmissable Sky shows like The Last of Us and Succession, as well as Netflix and Discovery Plus, and loads more, all in one subscription for £26 a month. Oh, and next day delivery with no upfront fee. Sky Stream, TV simplified. Head to sky.com. Requires Sky Stream and broadband minimum speed, 10 megabits per second, 18-month minimum term. Cut-off times apply for next day delivery. Excludes bank holiday, 18 plus, terms apply.
Hi, is this Tiffany?
Yes.
Hi, Tiffany. It's Detective LeClaire with the Sheriff's Department.
Hi, how are you?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
I'm okay.
Okay. You have a few minutes for a couple questions?
Sure.
Okay. Regarding Becky's cell phone, did you do anything with the service of that, you know, through the company?
Mm-hmm. I did. I canceled it.
Okay. Do you remember when you did that?
I can probably go look in my book, but it was probably the first week after we found out. I came home. That whole first week it happened. Let's see, it happened the 17th, and I think I did it on the 25th, September 25th, that Monday.
Okay.
And then I canceled my mom's house phone, and I had all her calls forwarded to my cell phone.
What about her cell phone?
Well, all three, John and my mom and Becky, were all on the same cell phone plan.
Okay, so you just canceled the whole plan,
yeah.
Now, let me see here. Which number was your mom's? Was it the 60 or the 61 number? Do you remember?
Hers was...
Okay, and then John's was the 61.
Yeah, I guess. I never had his, so I'm assuming so, because Becky's was...
Okay. And why did you cancel the service?
Why?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't I?
Oh.
No one, you know what? I keep calling the senior detective, and he doesn't return my phone calls, so...
Okay.
You know what? I just did what I needed to do, and instead of them adding up more and more fees that would eventually come out of my pocket anyways, I just called up everything and canceled it. So I didn't see any reason to keep it going.
Okay.
Well. And no one told me not to, and I had asked the other detective. I was like, well, I'm going to cancel all the bills. And
okay.
So.
Was there any phone calls that you got? Once you,
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Not sure what happened there.
I know, it just all of a sudden went, and it was cut off. I was like, okay.
I thought another call was coming in on your line or something.
Uh-uh.
Did you get any, calls that were forwarded from your mom?
I did. One of them was just some silly candle thing that they have some candles that she already prepaid for that have been sitting there. Any other calls that I've gotten were all for John, and they were all credit card companies.
Okay. Were they trying to solicit him as a customer, or was it for lack of payment, or?
It was probably due to lack of payment. Of course, when I asked, is this a credit card, they're like, well, we can't tell you that information, but, I mean, I know from 10 years ago when I was in debt with my credit card and you're not paying, they call up and say, oh, hey, is John there?
Right.
You know, or is Tiffany there? And they try to act like your friend instead of saying who they are. And that's what they were. And so I'm assuming it's for collection of payment. And one of them was really nasty. He's like, fine, well, I'll check with the, you know, with the Social Security office and, you know, probate or whatever. And I was like, okay, do whatever you want.
Were there any voicemails that you were able to, or did you check on any voicemails on any of these phones?
I don't have any passwords for any of them, so.
Okay. All right. That's about all I had to ask you.
Okay. So where is the case at right now? Do we have any facts? Do we have anything?
Just still going forward, trying to piece things together and figure out who's who and who was where.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. Am I allowed to know what the cause of death is yet?
Well, no.
Okay.
That won't be released until the investigation gets to a point where that can be released. But they still haven't officially identified your mom yet.
Right. Or John, I heard.
Right.
But Becky's already been identified.
Right. so they need to, DNA takes a lot longer than it does on TV, so they got to do that first, you know, before they can accurately provide any information anyways.
Yeah, when we originally called the coroner's office, we said, well, why don't we just do a DNA? And they said, well, it takes like 2 years. But I'm assuming because they're trying to identify a body, it's not going to take 2 years.
I don't think it's going to take that long, but it definitely takes probably a few months.
Okay. Yeah, and I was curious about that because, I mean, we have her whole estate waiting on a death certificate. And meanwhile, like, you know, her mortgage payments are having to be made. And, I mean, it's just a lot of money that's coming out because we don't have a death certificate.
Who's the mortgage company?
It's Midland Mortgage. Yeah, and I sat down for an entire day just investigating, trying to figure out who the insurance company was so I could even make a claim on the house. And so... yeah, it just hasn't been very much fun trying to find out who everyone is and all her creditors and not even just the creditors, but just trying to file the insurance claim.
Right. Do you have a phone number or address for the mortgage company?
I do. Let me go pull up my file.
You don't have to look for it now if it's not real handy. You can get back with me on that one. It'd be easier.
Okay. What number do I call you at?
When you come across that, you can just leave the address and phone number on my voicemail. How long has she had that company, do you know?
You know what? She was, I think she was with another company. She just refinanced the house. In July or August, she refinanced the house, so she's with Midland Mortgage. So the very first payment that was due on that new mortgage was due in September. And she had written a check and sent the check in. However, because the check cleared after she was already passed away, I'm assuming my mom was probably going to go put money in the bank. So not even one payment had been made on the new mortgage because the September payment bounced. So I paid the September payment.
Okay.
I wanted to make sure that, you know, they couldn't claim, like, well, no payments have ever been made on this, and I don't know what they would want to pull, but I wanted to make sure we actually made at least one payment on there.
So the first payment was due what month?
September.
But that bounced?
But it bounced. It was $785, and my mom only had, like, $735 or something. But I'm assuming in her purse she probably had a paycheck.
Okay.
And she was probably going to deposit it on Monday. But the check actually bounced on, I think it was, like, the 19th, like, 2 days. I know it was, like, 2 days later.
And you paid what? Did you pay October's payment, or you just paid September's payment?
I paid September's payment, the $785, and the late fee. I just didn't want them to claim, like, oh, payment's never been made. We're not going to hold to our end of the bargain. So I wanted to just, since no payments had been made on the new mortgage.
Did they get any extra money, you know, from the mortgage, like, you know, how people refinance and they get a little bit extra, you know, for home improvements or for whatever?
Not as far as I know. As far as I know, they didn't. All they did was refinance just to lower their payment. I mean, they were originally paying like $965 or something, and it lowered it down to like $785.
How much was it? Nine what?
I think it was $965 is what they were paying, or $969. It was pretty high.
Were they behind in any other bills?
There is some debt. I know that, but I don't. My mom was always behind in bills, so
okay.
I'm sure there's plenty.
Why was that? Why was she behind?
Well, because John was just a leech, and, you know, he hardly worked at all. So really, my mom's full-time job at Macy's was paying for everything. And so they could never get caught up. Now, I'm not quite sure now that she got the insurance money why she didn't pay off her bills.
What insurance money?
Actually, not insurance money, but it was the when Ron and my mom divorced.
Settlement.
She got part of his retirement.
Right.
And so.
Do you know how much?
It was. You know, Ron actually knows all the details, but I think it was supposed to be originally like $27,000. And what happened is my mom never finished the paperwork, so it gained so much interest because it stayed with Ron's money. So he gave her like $65,000. And of that $65,000, there is an account. I don't know where the account is because Ron didn't finish giving me the information, but there's like $53,000 left.
And what happened to the other 12?
I'm assuming she spent it. I'm assuming she probably got caught up on her mortgage payments because she was always behind. But I don't exactly know how she spent the $12,000. I don't know where that went.
Okay.
So there is a chunk missing, but I guess she's had it for about a year. So I don't know. Ron, like I said, Ron was supposed to give me the rest of that information. He actually found out where the account was and how much was there.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm sure he would be able to give you like all the details of that. I may not even be totally correct in what I'm telling you, but. But that's kind of what I was told.
Okay.
Yeah, so I don't know what the original amount was, but yeah, I know how much is left, but I don't know what bank it's in.
All right.
And I don't know where the $12,000 went exactly.
All right.
Yeah,
well,
so
I
that's
may
why
have
I'm
some
assuming.
Of that information anyways.
Okay, yeah, I'm assuming that my mom didn't refinance for extra money because she already had money, so...
All right.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, it doesn't seem like it. I pulled up her bank accounts, and there's not any significant amount of money in them. So it's not like she pulled anything out and had a bunch of money sitting in her.
Well, what about? Oh, okay. Well, that 53 is in the other account anyway. It's not her personal bank account.
No, it's in a separate account. It's in her name, but it's in a separate bank. It's not in Bank of America where she had her other accounts.
Did she ever talk to you about any of John's credit problems and needing to pay someone or something?
She did often talk about how John never paid his. I know for a fact she told me. Never paid his child support or his alimony, and she did always say that when she got the money from Ron, that she was going to pay off his debt for that, which was she told all of us it was $10,000, and we were all very upset. Like, why would you pay his debt off? That was really ridiculous. So that possibly could have happened. She could have still paid his. All his back child support and alimony off. That could have been where that $10,000 or $12,000 went. I do know that she purchased a brand new kitchen set or dining room set, like with the kitchen table and chairs and all that. And I know that was recent, but I don't know how much she spent on that. So yeah, John, you know, he had his driver's license was suspended, and he only worked under the table when he did work, so that they couldn't garnish his checks for child support and alimony. But my aunt told me that my mom called her, my aunt Yvette, and said that she did pay off John's debt, and he got his driver's license back, and so. But I don't know if that actually happened.
Okay.
Yeah, so I know my mom had always said it was like $10,000, and I know that I was always very upset about paying his debt off.
All right, well, if you come across the Midland Mortgage address and phone number, just give me a call and let me know that.
Okay. And then how long did you say it would take to identify my mom's body, you think?
I'm not positive, because we're still checking into some of that. But a few months wouldn't be out of ordinary.
Okay. Like 3 months or more?
It's hard to say, because it's one of those things where it has to go to a different place, and it almost goes in line with other DNA testing that's being done. It's not a process that is done in 10 minutes while you on a commercial break. So I'm still trying to get some better answers on that. And if I talk to you again, then maybe I'll have a better answer for you.
Okay.
All right?
Okay. All right. Well, I'll find the mortgage information for you, and if you don't answer, I'll just leave a message on your phone.
Okay. Thanks, Tiffany. Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
It is January 25th, 2018. It's now 4:20. I'm going to go with 4:20. Out here speaking with Tiffany Tisdale in Valencia. Tiffany, can you go ahead and say your full name?
Tiffany Tisdale.
And I have Deputy District Attorney, Assistant Deputy District Attorney John McKee is present also. All right, so, and this is Ryan Bodmer, Investigator Ryan Bodmer. Thank you for meeting with us. The purpose of coming out here is, again, not to really give you, we don't want to rehash your previous statements that you provided to Investigator Bumpensero at the time in 2006 of the original investigation. My questions will be pretty much somewhat follow-up to questions that were really never asked the last time. What I mean by that is that you may have provided some details that to us now we're trying to get more clarification for. All right. So I know I've got your address down. I'm not going to worry about any of that. Good contact number for you. Okay. And I've got your other contact information. We'll make sure that we get it added to the witness list. I want to go back to the time when this happened, and I want you to kind of focus on a calendar for me. We know the date that the incident happened was on the 17th, very early in the morning on the 17th, or late in the evening on the 17th, but the investigation really carried over into the 18th, which would be a Monday.
Okay.
As we push forward into that time frame. So looking at that, we're looking at the evening of the 17th being the time of the incident, and pushing forward, going forward into the 18th, 19th, 20th, and the 21st.
Okay.
Okay. Are the dates that we are really kind of focused on. And if you can kind of, I'll give you a moment to just wrap your brain around that. I know it's kind of hard. It's been a long time, and you did get a chance to refresh yourself with your previous statement. Investigator Bumpensero had spoken to you. Who is the first person that you spoke to from law enforcement about, and did you learn the news from, of the fires and then ultimately the deaths?
The first person I spoke to was Bumpensero.
Okay.
He's the one that interviewed me, correct?
He did interview you.
Okay.
But I'm specifically the very first time that you heard from anyone about this news.
Oh, the first time I heard about it, I was in Ventura.
Okay.
I was cleaning houses at the time. So I guess lots of family members had tried calling me, but I had just had my phone off.
Okay.
And I believe that Chuck, my godfather, actually was the first person to get a hold of me, but didn't tell me anything. He just said, you need to get a hold of your aunt right now.
Aunt.
And I'm pretty sure that I don't know if it was Yvette or Linda. I can't remember which one I spoke to at this point.
Okay.
And I called them. It might have even been Yvette. I just remember the conversation. I just remember them telling me that there had been a fire at the house and they had recovered three bodies. And I said, no, that doesn't even make sense. Like, that's not true. There was not, if there was a fire, there wouldn't have been any dead bodies. This doesn't even make any sense to me. So I already knew right away, like, no. And then the story changed quickly that they had found Becky's body outside. And I go, okay, this still, I already knew it didn't match up. Already knew she had to work the late shift that night. My mom stayed up late. I already knew it didn't match. Like, no matter what they told me, I was like, okay, you might have three bodies, but the circumstance of what you're telling me, So.
What day was this?
This was Sunday night. This was the same night that it happened.
Okay. So it was at that night, late.
Yeah,
in the
it was. So it wasn't even. It wasn't even that late. You know what? I bet you. So this was a Sunday night that it happened, right? Mm-hmm. I bet you it was the next night.
Yeah.
I bet you it was the next night after it happened.
Right. So I'll tell you this, that the incident occurred between the hours of 9:30, and I would even push it to 8, a little later, but you know, in the 8 o'clock time frame, pushing forward to the first police being there a little after 10 o'clock, okay?
Okay.
So that's in the evening there, so that's why I said the investigation really didn't segue in until the next morning,
right,
which would be the 18th.
Right.
Right.
So I think that was the first phone call that we had gotten were the next day. And now that you're saying, now that we're talking about that, that makes sense, because I remember that we were told a day later, and it was already in the newspaper that next day, and we hadn't even received a phone call yet. And it was, and I remember being very upset that we hadn't even been told, and it was already
out there.
In
papers
the
papers out there.
Sun. It was already in the newspaper, and that was upsetting.
All right.
So,
so kind of slowing it down just a little bit. So you're working, you get a call from one of your aunts, and you're not sure if it's Yvette or Linda, but one of the two. They call you, which would have been the next day from the incident.
Right.
And they tell you that there's been a fire at the house and that there were three bodies recovered.
Mm-hmm.
And you said to me there that you said you'd heard one of them say that one body was found outside.
Right.
Okay.
Was that on the evening of the 18th or in?
Yeah, so this conversation was all that same, in that same phone call, that initial phone call.
And that would have been the evening of the 18th.
Yes.
Okay. The evening. All right, see. We have that down now, at least some of that time frame down. Did they say or did they provide any details as to who was in the house or who was outside the house? Not knowing what you know now, because clearly we know a lot, but
right.
Talking about keeping your mindset on what you were told.
Yeah, no, I was told that evening that my sister, Becky, her body was outside the house.
And do you know who told you that? Was it one of your aunts?
Yeah, so this is all the same phone call.
Got it.
Didn't talk to anyone else. It was one single phone call.
Okay. All right. On the 18th, evening of the 18th. Okay, what happened after that phone call? Then you...
So I left immediately, drove home. From Ventura here to Santa Clarita. And I remember making a few phone calls. I called Becky's best friend when she lived up here. I remember calling Brandon and telling him, and I guess he had already heard. So a couple of people heard. And I think at that point, conversations, we all just started talking, like everyone started talking. I think if I'm not mistaken, I think I remember calling Robert the exact same night.
On the 18th.
On the 18th.
Okay.
On my way home. calling him and asking him, like, oh my God, have you heard what happened? And he's like, what are you talking about? You know, and I was just like, oh, you know, this happened to Becky. And he was like, oh yeah. And I was like, well, how do you feel about it? And he's like, I don't know, it's no big deal. Like, he acted like he could care less. Like, he had zero feeling about it, which was shocking to me.
So you told him that there was, that Becky had been found outside, or that there,
I don't know if I told him a detail, just kind of what had happened, that, mm-hmm. that there was a fire and that three bodies had been recovered and she was dead. And he wasn't even surprised. There was mm-hmm. zero, like, he didn't act shocked or like a normal reaction. There was, I don't know, he just acted like, okay, so.
And so you get this call on the evening of the 18th where you finally call back Yvette and Linda. This is after work because you were working?
Well, I was working. Mm-hmm. I was still working, but from the nature of Chuck saying, like, you really need to get a hold of your aunt, like, right now.
Do you remember what the time frame that was? What time that was at?
I want to say I didn't work much past like 5:30. So I want to say that it was somewhere around that 5:30 time okay. period. It's the best I can remember.
Sometimes, all right. Yeah, no worries. 5 to 5:30. That's your best memory.
Yeah.
Okay. And once you get this news, you don't start making phone calls. You actually leave. You're getting ready to leave.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I leave.
All right. And when you leave, you're leaving where?
Ventura.
And you're going to?
At the time, I was living with Chuck.
Okay.
And he lives like a mile from here.
Okay. So then you went there to Charles Kunze.
Yes.
Okay. So Chuck's house, and then from that house, it's now later on in the evening, or at least by 6 o'clock mm-hmm. standard, 7 o'clock or
yeah, it is 7.
What's happening now at the house there on the 18th?
Okay, so
one day after the murders.
Brandon shows up.
Who's Jacob, Brandon?
So when Becky lived up here, mm-hmm. Jake is Chuck's nephew that okay. lives down the street. Brandon lives on the same street as Chuck, and they all went to high school together.
Oh, okay.
So they were all like,
I think I know who these are.
Yeah,
I've seen the interviews. Okay, got it. I know who they are.
So they came over, and we were all just, you know, what had happened, and I remember we were all just crying and very, very upset. And just kind of talking about, like, and I just kept, you know, I think we were just kind of hashing the details of, like, wait a minute, they wouldn't have died from a fire. Like, this doesn't make sense. Like, I mean, you just know someone's habits. Like, you know, they're not going to die from a fire at, you know, 7, 8 o'clock at night. They're just, you know.
Right. Kind of bizarre.
And I was thinking, I was like, how would her body be found outside the second story window? That doesn't make sense either. Do you know how many times we've jumped out that window off the roof onto the deck? Like,
yeah.
I mean, you know, it's like, no. Like, yeah. She didn't slip and fall. Like, there was, so we just kept trying to put the pieces together of, like, what could have happened? Was there a robbery gone bad and she tried to jump out? But who knows? Like, we just kept trying to put the pieces together because we didn't have anything.
So at your point in time, and at this time, you know, all you know is very vague details from your aunts, again, either Yvette or
yeah.
Linda, that there had been a fire and
yeah.
that there had been three bodies recovered, and
yeah.
that one of which was a body that was found outside, and that was Becky. But there was no other details.
I think the calls started coming in and bits and pieces started coming in because
we'll get to those.
Okay. So
we'll
I don't know if it was in the
as we
night.
Progress. Yeah, again, that's why I was trying to walk you going down this timeline
okay.
here. So on the 18th, all right. On the 18th, fair to say that was what I just recapped with you was the information you knew, and then leading into the next day. I mean, as you go in through the evening, when do you decide to go from the 18th and you're at Charles Kunze's house, do you decide to come to the valley, Desert Valley?
So my grandfather, which isn't living now, we all decided that we would go up to Santa Barbara so at least all of our family could be together. And my grandfather was the one that decided, look, no one's contacted us. No one's interviewing us. No one's letting us know what's going on.
And this I'm sorry if I can stop you. This is the morning of the 19th, or is it the evening of the 18th?
That he decided that we
that you traveled up there, yeah.
It was probably the next day on the 19th that I traveled up to Santa Barbara.
Okay.
Can I clarify one thing?
So yes.
When Brandon and Jake and other people mm-hmm. were here at Charles's house mm-hmm. and you were all talking about things, when do you remember in that time frame having that call with your aunts to discuss things? Or will you learn some details? Do you remember what time that would have been?
5 or 5:30?
I thought that was when she started to drive back from
I think about the time that I had heard, because I know even after hearing the information, I sat on the woman's couch for a little bit. Because I was just like stunned.
Because then it was about that time, then after she took that call, then my understanding is then you drove to Charles's house.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah, so that 5 to 5:30 is when she decided to take the call and call back and speak to either Yvette or Linda.
Yeah.
And that's where you got the information that we recapped.
Yes.
And then you went to see Charles Chuck's, because that's where you were living.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you came across Jake and Brandon, and everybody was very upset, and mm-hmm. you were just at that point trying to figure out, well, how can this be?
Right.
All right. And there's no other information there, details that you've spoken with of anybody at the crime scene? Did you speak to anybody that night about any details?
Nope.
Okay. The next all night long?
No, okay. I don't.
And
yeah.
then on the 19th, I'm saying now it's 2 days away from the death, from the mm-hmm. murders, you decide in the morning, and this is where I'm at, you decide, you spoke to your grandfather,
mm-hmm.
let's go meet and be family together in Santa Barbara.
Right.
All right, and now that's on the 19th, so that's the best of your recollection in the morning. Okay, what happens up there? Like, what's the...
So, you know, I think details just started coming in, little bits and pieces of information. I think by this point, now we had heard that the neighbor was the first one to show up mm-hmm. to the property. And I think their last names were Wright or something. It was a house that was almost similar to ours. So I think now at this point we had heard that he was the first one to show up because he saw that there was a fire, saw that the house was completely engulfed, and saw that Becky's body was actually in a wheelbarrow on fire. So now we had heard, now we have some new information. We're like, wow, okay.
And this is on the 19th.
Yeah.
Okay. And this detail is coming in just bits and pieces because of the connection to the neighbors?
Yeah, I guess just from everyone knowing different neighbors and knowing different pieces.
Okay.
Somehow it's now just little pieces are leaking here and there. The newspaper had written articles and taken statements. We'd read all of that. Like,
but in that, there was no details.
Now we have 2 days of, well,
in
except
the newspaper.
For we had 2 days of newspaper information where we hadn't had any information. Like,
right.
So, I mean, so even...
Can I ask you a question?
Even what the
quick?
Newspaper had to mm-hmm. say was more than what we were even getting.
In the newspaper, did you learn anything about the crime scene, details of the crime scene? From your memory?
I don't think details.
Okay. So as you're at this house, this is the first time you're getting significant details of who was at the scene first.
Yeah, that now
who,
all of a sudden
who,
we
where
have
was
a
Becky found?
Right.
Okay. And
right.
this is on the 19th, right? Is when you're finding this out, and that's where that is. All right, so we got the neighbors in there. Details started coming in, and that's where you first learned that Becky was potentially on fire in a wheelbarrow.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the 19th, 2 days after the murders, well, a little more than a day, about more than a day and a half, and 3/4. And did you at this time reach out to anybody in the Coachella Valley? You said and I thought this was I wanted to make sure I got the right date on that, that you think you made a contact to Robert, which would have been on the 18th.
Right, the night of.
The night of, because you spoke to Jake and Brandon, then you actually, in your inquiry, said, I'm going to call this guy.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you call him?
Because he, you know, in all of this, them being boyfriend and girlfriend, I knew he had cared a lot about her.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it was, it's been so long now. I can't remember if it was, well, obviously it was a recent breakup.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought that he would really be stunned and care to mm-hmm. hear what had happened.
Right. Do you recall when this call came in, if you could? It was clearly, it was well after 5:30.
I know it was dark. I remember driving home.
Okay.
And, you know, I mean, it's summer, so it, you know, it was, the sun had already gone down, so it had to have been, you know,
well,
you might even put this time a little later, because I just remember it was dark.
Mm.
The sun wasn't up at all. So, I mean, we're talking summer, and, you know, the sun goes down later, you know. So even logically, I'm thinking maybe it was a little later, because for the sun to be down, it had to have, probably been 8?
Yeah.
So when you say the call came in, you made the call to Robert, or Robert called you?
No, I called him.
Okay, and you believe that was on the 18th?
Right.
I believe that was on the 18th on my way home.
Okay.
Okay. And at this point in time, you didn't have any knowledge of the crime scene?
None.
Okay.
Had no idea.
That's all.
When the call to Robert came in, you had knowledge of the crime scene at that point?
I had knowledge that there was a fire and 3 recovered bodies.
Okay.
That was it.
Okay. And one was outside.
And then eventually, then it came in that one was outside or something. Or I definitely know that they had said it was my sister that was outside.
Okay.
So I did know that part.
Okay, but you didn't know anything else. This is a specific from the neighbors. Where they say, hey, I was the first one there, or, hey, I think, you know, Becky was in a wheelbarrow on fire, hey, the house is fully destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
You started to get bits and pieces
right
then. Specifically was the neighbors were doing that part right there. All right,
you did not share any of the details of the crime scene with Robert?
No.
When you spoke to him?
When I made that first phone call,
that's what I was going to ask her,
and just told him that she was, there was 3 bodies recovered, that was it. I never spoke to him ever again.
That's what I was trying to get
never
at.
Never made
that,
another call, never said.
Only made that.
Never met.
But you remember physically speaking to him.
Yep.
Got it. And because you described it as kind of cold, distant, not concerned.
Because I was shocked at how he responded.
Okay.
Which then I shared that with Brandon, and Brandon had told me I called him too.
Okay.
He called him, tells him the exact same thing, and he said, I got the exact same response. He acted like he didn't even care. Like, okay, why are you telling me? Like, whatever. Like, he didn't act like he cared in the least. And Brandon and I both shared that our conversations were almost identical, and Robert had responded exactly the same way, and we were both really stunned with his lack of any type of reaction.
And would this have been a call to his cell phone?
Probably.
Okay.
Okay.
I don't think I had another number.
Yeah. Well, we have his for that day. So for that period of time. So we should be able to hopefully match that up. Interesting. Just an added point on that. I want to go back to the 19th now, and you're in Santa Barbara. You're starting to get pieces of information,
mm-hmm.
and you still haven't heard from law enforcement.
Nope.
That's where you left off when I rudely cut you off. But I was trying to get this in my head.
Yeah.
Here, so.
Still haven't heard anything. You know, we still
from
haven't been contacted. Later, I think I learned that we hadn't even been contacted by law enforcement. Law enforcement had contacted Ron and expected Ron to filter the information to the rest of us, which he knew about it,
mm-hmm.
from my understanding, the night it happened.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't call my family until a day later.
Okay.
So at this point, I still don't even think we've been contacted by any
law enforcement. Right.
So I think we spent the entire day in Santa Barbara just being together, and just, I remember just being so emotional and all of us crying, and my grandfather said, you know what, we need to just take a trip down there. And so I can't remember if it was immediately the next day. I mean, I guess we could look based on the day that I went down and gave the testimony.
All right. Right. Okay.
You know, or gave my statement, because
you have
the day
that
before,
you have that
for sure,
up there.
Yeah, I would have been in Santa Barbara.
And you remember this interview taking place in the valley?
Yes.
Coachella Valley.
It was, we drove to the Palm Desert Sheriff Station, showed up, and that's when we all showed up as a big caravan, mm-hmm. our whole family. Then they decided, oh, well, maybe we should interview you. And then they started taking us in one by one.
Okay.
So it was really done because we pushed
you drove
it.
Down there. Okay.
Right. It wasn't like we were contacted or asked for an interview at all.
And what was that day? At least what we can tell on the report.
So September 20th.
Okay.
Okay. So that's the day where you were, and that makes sense because we're going through
right.
this timeline.
So if I'm in Santa Barbara on the 19th and we all decide we're yep. driving to the desert together.
Right.
We get up. I remember we went super early in the morning. I remember we left at like 4 or 4:30 in the morning.
Your grandfather.
Grandfather was like, we're not hitting LA traffic. And then so we went down to the desert. We drove down that next morning.
Okay, yep, that matches up. I'm just looking at making sure, confirming the date here, which is absolutely spot on. All right, so now we're on Wednesday, the 20th, and now you go to the police station for the first time, and that's when police start talking to you,
mm-hmm.
right? Had you spoken to anybody on the cell phone? Had you talked to anyone that gave you details of the crime scene?
Talk to anybody or
anyone, any source of information that would have said, hey, look, this is what is going on over here.
As
a police officer called you, did you have a source of information that would have called you and said, this is what we're looking at over here?
Nope.
Okay. When we were at that, and I want to go backtrack a little bit, on the 19th, when you're in Santa Barbara with the family and neighbors are calling, did anybody specifically call you and say, hey, this is what I see over here?
No.
Okay. So this is just all people that have developed relationships with family members,
yeah.
with Linda, Yvette, so
yeah.
forth, friends of your mother's.
It's all third party coming
right.
in. It's being, you know, it's
okay.
being told to me, you know, secondhand.
Okay.
No one's ever called me to tell me they knew of anything.
Any details.
Right.
All right. So on the 20th, you're finally interviewed. You speak with Investigator Bumpensero. Is
mm-hmm.
that correct?
Yes.
All right. At that time, do you learn any details of the crime scene?
One detail that I had learned, and only because I asked, I remember saying, how did my sister die? And he said, I don't know. And I can't tell you that she was dead when they lit her on fire. So he had told me that she had been lit on fire, and I said, was she dead before they lit her on fire? And he says, I don't know. She was either dead or she was unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
So at that time, it was only because I had asked specifically about that,
okay.
that was probably a detail that I learned from.
And then putting that together with that Becky was in a wheelbarrow, that was your understanding of the crime scene?
Of what was going on. And then, you know, I don't know at what point I had learned that my mom and John were in the house. At some point in there, I do know that they were,
mm-hmm.
they were both in the house, but I don't know exactly when I learned that information.
Okay. So, but, you know, based on what you had a chance to refresh your memory on what your conversation was with Bump and Cero, did you have any conversations with anyone else on that day outside of Bump and Cero as to the condition of the crime scene?
Law enforcement or?
Yes.
Yeah, no.
Okay, so the only law enforcement
person I spoke to
was, okay, Investigator Bump and Cero. All right, anybody else that maybe had would have been friends with Becky? You had mentioned it earlier that there was a girlfriend of hers that was she was very close with. Any conversations with her or any at all at this point?
You know, I just remember being outside that the sheriff's station, and it really was just a mix of our entire family. Tanya was there. You know, I think she was there with her husband at the time. Ron was there. But really, so it was just family. So I don't remember even, like, friends or anything.
Oh, Becky's.
Yeah, okay. Like, nothing. I don't remember anyone else besides our family really being the one there.
Okay, that's fair enough. Do you recall having a conversation with Javier Garcia?
Yes.
Okay, and who is Javier Garcia again, to your recollection?
So my understanding of Javier Garcia was a really good friend of Becky's. They never dated. There wasn't an interest there, but they hung out together all the time. I know that he was Mayor Garcia's son, Bonnie Garcia's son.
Yeah.
And my understanding is they were just really good friends, and they used to hang out all the time.
Okay. When you spoke to him, do you remember what day that was that you spoke to him? If we look at that map thing again. Here's a day of travel, by the way. This is a long drive to the desert.
Yes, we left early, remember?
Yeah, we got there early.
It's like I was already interviewed by 9:50 that morning, so, you know.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you did. Yeah, you guys did get there early. Do you remember your conversations? You spoke with Javier Garcia. Do you remember if you spoke to him on the phone or if you spoke to him in person?
No, we spoke in person.
All
right. If I have my timeline right, my understanding is on the 20th, after everyone had been interviewed, we were told that we weren't going to be allowed up to the crime scene until they had opened up the house. And
right.
It was still under investigation. And for some reason, in my head, it was like 4 days. I keep thinking it was 4 days after the crime had happened, like we weren't allowed to go up to the property. So I remember we were all really hungry. We all went to go eat. I think we actually went to go eat at Islands. And we were sitting in a big, giant booth. And that might have even been for dinner. I remember at some point, and I'm pretty sure it was on the 20th, at some point we were at the mall. We're in the food court. And Javier was there and his cousin, what was his name? Jacob?
Okay.
I think his name was Jacob. And they started kind of filling us in on what they knew.
Okay.
And so my whole family's sitting there and they're
receiving information.
Yeah. And so they're telling us, you know, so that at that point, that's when Javier had let us know that he knew all about the hike they were supposed to go on, everything that was going on, that he had made the phone call from the payphone because he had been in Hemet coming through, go back to the desert, because at the time there wasn't cell phone service.
Mm-hmm.
And so he stopped at the payphone and he's like, I called her and said, are you sure you don't want me to come mm-hmm. over? Are you sure? Like, I'm right here. And she's like, no, I'll be fine. And he's like, okay. And so he drove home.
Okay.
And so that was when I had learned about that. at the same time, I had learned that Becky and Jacob had recently dated, and I guess it was very amicable. They both decided it just wasn't for them, and they were still really on good terms. Like, there wasn't anything there that...
Okay, so this is at the food cart in the mall,
in the
conversation,
mall.
And he was telling you this. Did he tell you any information that he was aware of or that he knew of or did about the crime scene? Or did you say, was there a discussion about the crime scene at all between
nope.
the two of you?
Nope.
Nothing?
He said he didn't know anything. He just called the house. And I did learn that, you know, she had to work that night, you know, so I knew that. So I knew she was up. It's not like she was sleeping or whatever. We had learned about Robert saying, you know, I guess claiming they had decided to go on this hike together, which I was like, okay. And then I was like, oh, okay, you know, she lives up in the mountains, whatever. But then when we had learned that he had made threats, and then it was concerning, like, why would she agree
Who?
To do this? Why would my sister
Who
agree
made threats?
That Robert had made the threats that he was going to kill her? There was something like that floating around.
Where did you learn this at?
So this, I don't know if I heard this from Javier, which is why he was concerned, which is why he stopped to say, are you sure you don't want me to come by? I just remember him being concerned. And that she was alone, and that, you know, he was just like, are you sure you don't? So I might have learned it after the fact.
Okay. Did you learn that from him, Javier?
Boy. That I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't, as soon as people start talking, it's just like a swarm and a flood
right.
of information starts coming in. Oh, there's just talk everywhere. And somebody now knows this from this person and that person and where it all comes from.
Do you think that
gets kind of hard?
You may have shared the information you learned about the crime scene with Javier and Jacob because they're sharing information with you. Do you believe that you may have shared some information with him on the occasion that you spoke to him?
I don't know what there was for me to know. He already knew, he was already aware of the situation, so I don't think there was anything that I was filling him in on.
But I mean, your details about the crime scene, because what you just indicated to us that he didn't know anything about the crime scene, but these other details.
But you guys did. That's kind of what I was saying.
Yeah.
Because you guys had already known that there was bodies and that Becky, and then now you know about the wheelbarrow. Did you tell him that then, or was there? It seems as if you were having a back and forth conversation.
Yeah,
where you were sharing,
well,
trying to sort things out.
Right. My family was asking both of them questions, and we were, you know, they were telling us stuff, and we were sharing information back and forth. And how we even met up, I don't even know if we happened to be in the food court and they happened to walk. I don't even know how there was even a meeting of the two of us. Don't even know how that happened.
Is it possible that there could have been discussion of the crime scene at that point?
Well,
as to where the bodies were found and so forth.
Absolutely. I mean, there could have absolutely been conversation of, because that's what we knew. And, you know, when you don't suspect anyone, you're not really thinking, like, maybe I shouldn't say anything.
Yeah.
And I really don't suspect Javier. I don't, you know. And I, you know, I knew of my sister's relationship with him. And, you know, I guess people surprise you. But, you know, not in my wildest dreams did I ever think he had anything to do with this. So to me, it wasn't. I wasn't worried about telling him what we knew, and he was telling us what he knew.
Okay. So it seemed like a back and forth conversation about sharing of what you knew and what he knew, and,
yeah.
and that's why he would have told you that, oh, by the way, did you know that Robert was supposed to, and it was it Robert, did he say, or did he say it was anybody else to you? Or?
Well, he just said Robert.
Okay.
Our whole family didn't even know somebody else was
okay.
involved.
And that's fine at that time in
right.
2006. That's kind of trying to bring you back over here to the, and this is at the
yeah.
evening of the 20th still. Or could this be in the 21st?
Well, this I'm pretty sure this was, we had all went to go eat or something like lunchtime on the 20th. After
at
we
the
had
mall,
all
which
had,
would be closer to the station.
Right. So we had all had like our interviews and did our thing and we're hungry. We traveled at 4 in the morning or something. So I think then we went to go.
To the mall.
Mm-hmm.
And then plus, and then the evening it was the.
And then I think in the evening we went to dinner.
Okay.
And I know, I think pretty sure for dinner or breakfast this next morning, half of my family kind of went with Ron to talk about whatever they're going to do, and the other half of my family, we went and ate somewhere else. So at this point, now we kind of split up. But we're still waiting
mm-hmm.
because we're staying in the desert because we're waiting to go up to the crime scene. We want to go up and see the property, which we were told. That at some point, I thought it was like 4 in the afternoon, or I can't remember what the time was, but we were told we would then be allowed onto the property.
Which, when did that happen?
So, that I'm pretty sure was on the 21st.
Okay.
I don't remember it being the same day. I'm pretty sure I remember spending the night that it took...
Because, you were there. You stayed the night, exactly. So
yeah.
that would take it to the 21st. Did you stay another night? It could have been longer.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I just remember us, going up there and waiting for them to,
clear
it so that we could go on the property.
Okay. And they had it secured.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I guess.
So when you went up to the property...
Yeah.
When you went up to the property,
mm-hmm.
were there police officers still there and the, crime scene tape and stuff like
yes.
that? Okay.
Yeah.
So the property was secured on at least as far as you recollect.
Yeah, I don't know if there was a guard standing at the driveway saying no one's allowed, I don't know.
Bottom line is you didn't have access.
I guess we're rule followers, so it was like we were told we weren't allowed to go, we didn't push our mm-hmm. luck, we didn't try.
All right.
And then at some point while we're up there, they had said, all right, it's clear.
Okay. And then during that time frame, you'd ran into Javier in person. Did you ever call him?
Mm-mm.
Did you ever speak to him on the phone that you recall?
Not that I remember.
Okay. So this is a personal conversation that
mm-hmm.
you had. Okay. All right. You have any questions?
Just one more question about the phone call. Did you have Javier's at least phone number? Did you exchange information? Could he have called you at some point in time? Do you
sure.
ever recall speaking to him on the phone?
I don't recall speaking to him on the phone. I think it's highly likely that I gathered his phone number or took his phone number.
Mm-hmm.
We exchanged information
okay.
at
okay.
that time. I think that's highly likely.
All right. Okay. I think we've crossed the parallel there of the at least of the days that we were talking about. And again, you do have the materials for that, and I would just encourage you to continue to refresh your memory
okay.
based upon your initial statement that you provided. Our follow-up questions were specific in nature. I think
okay.
you can kind of figure that out. And I don't have any further questions, so I'm going to go ahead and end. It's now 5:00.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production and is distributed by Wondery. Edited by Kelly Barron's Brink and sound engineered by Shane Yoder. All music for the show was created, composed, and scored by PutThemInASong.com, who also mixed and mastered this episode. All of our fonts across all of our logos and banners were created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design, and you can find more of Tate's work on Etsy. Thank you to Katie Ross of CreatedInTandem.com for designing, creating, managing, and maintaining our website. truthandjusticepod.com, where you can view all photos and documents discussed in every episode. And a big thank you to our transcription team, Pamela Westby, Kathy McElhaney, Kay Woodyomnik, Ginger Fiola, Erica Cantor, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Ford, Courtney Wimberly, and Melissa Cardenas. And as always, thank you to all of you for all of your engagement and support. If you like the show and you'd like to support us, you can do so in several ways. To financially support the show, the best thing you can do is just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice. You'll not only be supporting the show, but you'll get something in return. On Patreon, you can pledge as little as $3 a month, and we have reward levels. For just $5 a month, you get access to ad-free versions of all of our episodes and behind-the-scenes bonus video content every week. Then other reward levels include t-shirts, hats, and even the opportunity to co-host one of our Friday follow-up episodes. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice. You can also do us a huge favor by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. And lastly, you can always support us by supporting the brands that sponsor this program. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider for future seasons, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. And the most important thing that you can do is to engage in our investigations. You can keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the Truth and Justice Podcast fans page on Facebook. And for all you tweeters out there, you can connect with us on Twitter @TruthJusticePod. And I can be found personally on all forms of social media @BobRuffTruth. And don't forget that we always have our 24/7 voicemail line open for questions, comments, or tips on our cases. That phone number is 269-224-2833. However you do it, stay engaged, stay in touch. But as for now, I'm signing off. I'm Bob Ruff, and this has been Truth and Justice. We'll be right back.